Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. So I am here with Tracy McCubbin. Tracy is the founder of Declutterfly, and she's written two books, Making Space Clutter-Free, the last book on decluttering you'll ever need, and Make Space for Happiness, How to Stop Attracting Clutter and Start Magnetizing the Life You Want. You may remember her from episode 78, and I've had so much feedback from listeners about that episode. People loved what Tracy had to say, so when she suggested coming back, it was an easy yes. Tracy, how are you?
I'm so good, love. How are you?
I am okay, thank you. As a Brit, I am contractually obliged to talk about the weather, and you are in the path of a hurricane. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, we think it's taken a sharp left, but California got hit with not only a hurricane, but an earthquake yesterday. So we are calling it a hurricane. My part of the state is okay, but further south in Mexico got hit pretty hard and up in the mountains. So we're just kind of waiting to hear the damage. So far, I don't think anybody's lost a home or a life or anything. So we're breathing better about that, but we were batting down the hatches for sure.
I bet. So before we get started, I have just watched one of your recent Instagram videos about how important it is to separate out decluttering, organizing, and cleaning as three separate steps. And even though it's not particularly what we're talking about today, it's so important. Can you just give us a quick 2 minutes on why that makes so much more sense?
Yeah, this is a big one. And I think it's really where a lot of people get stuck, because they are truly three separate tasks. Decluttering is one thing. That's a certain focus. That's a certain mindset. You're making decisions based on, do I need this? Do I use it? Do I want it? Can I keep it? Right? So that's one whole task. Then the next is the stuff that I'm going to keep. How do I organize it? Where does it live? Where do I know where to go find it? You know, does it make sense? Like in my house, we're just two people. So we keep all the batteries in one drawer and we know exactly where batteries are. I've worked with families where they're like, we need some batteries upstairs. We need some batteries downstairs. So that's the organizing portion. And if you try and declutter and you try and organize at the same time, you will just freeze up because they're different parts of your brain making different kinds of decisions. And when people realize that, it just, it's a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, I don't have to do it all at once. I can look at it differently. And then there's cleaning. And cleaning is a whole different thing. And cleaning is, you know, oftentimes when we're working with a client, you know, we'll empty a shelf or we'll empty a closet. And of course, while it's empty, we'll wipe down the shelves, we'll take a vacuum, we'll sweep it out. Like if it's empty, do it. But that's also a different task. And somehow it's sort of gotten, I don't know why, but it's sort of gotten to this thing that like you have to do all three at once. And I don't, you know, I don't think that it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So, you know, for me in my life, I kind of spend my Sundays are my organizing days. I make sure the laundry is put away. I make sure my desktop is cleaned off. I put things back where they've gotten out in the week. And then I start Monday like, great. And decluttering is just, I just set the time aside. Like, I'm like, this closet's making me crazy. I can't shut this drawer. Let's spend a little time. But I think when people separate out those three tasks and activities, it makes so much more sense.
And also it made me think a trap that a lot of people, including me, fall into is buying storage stuff, buying shelves and boxes and things to organize without decluttering. And it made me think that if they are more separated out, then you wouldn't buy boxes and shelves when you're still decluttering because organizing is a different step.
Definitely. I mean, people say to me all the time when I come to work with them, well, what do I need to buy? And I'm like, don't buy anything. Yeah. Do not buy it. First of all, you probably already bought it.
Yep.
There's a really good chance you already have those baskets, those bins, those dividers.
Yep.
So let's not buy it till we see what we have. And also until you declutter, you don't know what's going back where. So it does it. You know, there's this, when we're someone who's dealing with a lot of clutter, you know, you want to contain it. You're like, oh, this pretty bin will fix my life. You know, if I just have the right tools, if I have the right organizing tools, then this problem will go away.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. You got to face the clutter. You got to deal with the clutter and then you move into organizing it. And that, you know, breaking those two things apart just makes sense. And also I want to say this to people, especially if they're starting on their decluttering journey and if they're starting from a, you know, a pretty overwhelming place. When you start decluttering, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yes, so much.
This is the problem with social media is that when you look at it, it's like, yeah. Oh, look, they just did that. So that's hours and that's a time-lapse camera and that's six people doing it. And so if people could understand that when I'm starting my decluttering, which then will lead to my organizing, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
And that's part of the process. There's nothing wrong with you. And, you know, a lot of people don't have the luxury to do it all at once. Like we have jobs, we have lives, we can't do a big project. So you, if you say like, okay, I'm going to tackle, you know, let's say you have a room in your house that's become the dumping ground and you want to tackle it.
Yeah.
It may take you a couple weekends. And it may feel worse, but that's part of the process. I have been doing this for 17 years. I have done it with thousands and thousands of people. And the first couple days, hours of it, or it feels like a disaster.
Oh, months.
Yeah. Months. Exactly. Exactly. And that's another thing to remember that the time, you work at the pace you can work at. You can work at the pace that you can work at. You know, I had a client who 4 hours, that was all she could do. And at 3 hours and 58 minutes, She would take my purse and she would put it by the front door with a bottle of water, and she would go into a room and she'd shut the door, and I'd go, see you in a week. And she'd go, great. You know, and yeah. She knew. So that's another thing. If people are embarking on their decluttering journey, what's your constitution for this? Like, you may only have a half an hour in you. You may only have, you know, and first of all, also, this is worth saying, if you work a full-time job, if you're raising a family, whatever, like taking care of aging parents, to think that you're going to come home at 8 o'clock at night and do a whole bunch of decluttering, you're not. Yeah. And that's okay. That's okay. And so I think when people understand that those three tasks are separate and they should be approached separately and you have different goals with them, and that it's going to get worse before it gets better. And that's all part of the process. And if you're in it, you're doing it. And that's fantastic.
100%. So your books about decluttering are all about the 7 emotional clutter blocks that you've identified over all those years of helping clients to declutter. And I really like how there's such a great approach to understanding why people hold on to stuff they don't need or stuff they don't even like. And I think what I like about it is I feel like it's relatable ideas, whether you're somebody dealing with very mild clutter or quite extreme clutter. I think the principles of it are roughly the same.
Definitely. And you know, the thing, you know, these clutter blocks were born out of, again, hands-on work with people and seeing them over and over and over again. I'd hear different clients at all levels, you know, people who are truly dealing with hoarding disorder, diagnosed hoarding disorder, to, you know, people who had inherited all this stuff from a family member who had passed away. And everyone was saying the same things. It was exactly the same. I was like, oh, you're worried because you spent a lot of money for that, or you spent some money for that and you can't let go of it because you spent money on that. Clutter block number 7, the stuff I keep paying for. And when I was able to break it down, and it just resonates with people. And, you know, I think that we need to remember that stuff, inanimate objects, come to us with no meaning. They just show up. And then we put all the meaning on top of it. You know, we just dump the meaning on top of it. I got married a couple months ago, and I just did a post about, I now have my wedding dress.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And I don't think I'll ever be able to wear it again. It's not a super lacy, but it looks like a wedding dress. And, you know, I have the pictures from the day and they're beautiful. And so I was, you know, I did a post about it, and I expected so many people like, you have to hang on to it. And there were so many people that were like, oh, I've been married for 25 years. I don't have kids, or I have all sons, you know, whatever. And they were like, I don't know why. I just hang on because everyone told me I had to. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, everyone tells you you have to, and you don't. And so we create these stories, and they come generationally, they come societally, they come, you know, one of the reasons, and this is especially apropos to wedding dresses, furniture, you know, not in that distance past, things were hard to get, you know, not that long ago. I mean, my grandmother lived through both world wars. Like, you couldn't just go buy a couch, you know, you had, so there was this import given to things because they were hard to acquire. That's not true anymore. So yet we still hang on. And again, I'm not saying that I think things should be disposable. I mean, the landfill keeps me up at night, you know, there's that. So I really do think that we need to focus our buying on quality, you know, things that are going to last for a long time. I do believe, you know, in buying secondhand, all those kinds of things. Yeah. But this idea of like, oh, I have to keep this because it's important. Well, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, it was important because it was hard to get.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to take all that stuff into consideration.
Definitely. We're going to do something a bit differently today. It's quite fun. So I've chosen 6 items, 3 that I have managed to get rid of and 3 that I'm having dilemmas about. And what we're going to do is talk through each of them with Tracy helping me to identify which of those clutter blocks is affecting me or was affecting me for the different things. And these are all things I've not talked about. Like, I've talked endlessly about the fact that I finally managed to get rid of my bread maker, for instance. So these aren't the things I've chosen today are not things I've already talked about on the podcast. Although the bread maker, shall I say it again, is gone. Yay. But actually, so the first 3 we're going to look at are things I've already got rid of. And the first one is slightly related. And I don't quite know how to describe it. It's a different kitchen gadget, but I kept it because I didn't know what it was. And I kept thinking, well, it must be important, but I don't know what it does. And it had like different parts, and I would keep finding parts that were clearly related to it because it was red. So like it stood out. And what I think it was some kind of unnecessarily complicated like grater and chopper and slicer, but I couldn't work out how to make it work. I chop with a knife without any problems. And yes, so let's talk through first of all why I kept that.
So a couple questions. Did you purchase it or did someone give it to you?
I assume I purchased it. I have no memory of it. I just found it in the kitchen.
Right. And so, right, you just found it. And do you have any memory of ever using it?
No.
Right.
No.
Right. So this is so good, right? This is, you know, this is a little bit of a, this probably to me falls under maybe 2 of the clutter blocks. Maybe clutter block number 4, my fantasy stuff for my fantasy life, in the sense of like, I think I should be a fantastic chef and I think I should have all these gadgets and I think I should, you know, I've been watching The Bear and I'm going to start making mise en place and, you know, whatever that is. And that, funnily enough, I think a lot of kitchen gadgets fall under that.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, it's funny that you bring up bread makers because I see this all the time. We had a moment of like, we got some sourdough starter and we were going to make our own bread and we were going to, you know, and then we killed the sourdough starter and that was terrible because you felt bad about it. And it just was this sort of ongoing. And then one day I was like, you know what? There's a fantastic bakery and every Sunday it has a booth at the farmer's market and we go to the farmer's market 3 out of 4 Sundays a month. And it's the highlight of our week and we like buying their bread. And off it goes, right? That was that thing. So I think, you know.
It took me longer to, not surprisingly, to get rid of it. It was years ago I got it. And I did use it 4 or 5 times a week for a good 4 months. It was great. Really nice bread. Lovely to have the smell of baking bread, all of that. But like with many kitchen gadgets, it was quite a pain to wash. Didn't clean easily, so I just stopped using it and then kept it, I think because, well, for a lot of reasons. I think because it had cost money. I think because
block number 7, the stuff I keep paying for. You paid for it and you know, and I think the kitchen gadgets do that too. The stuff I pay for, but also my fantasy, like I should be a bread baker. You know, I get at this all the time with people where it's like, yes, we all should bake our own bread, I guess. But just because we should doesn't mean we have to. You should drop it in the show notes, but there's a fantastic cookbook called Make the Bread by the Butter. And so this woman, you'll love this. She lost her job and put her family on a pretty tight budget. And she was like, I'm going to figure out what it costs to make certain things versus buying them.
Oh.
And so she does this whole cookbook about like you know, the greatest example is hummus. We eat hummus all the time. You know, you buy a plastic tub of hummus. It's like, for us, it's like $4.99. Now it's like up to $6. You know, you can buy a can of a recyclable can of garbanzo beans, some tahini. You can make it for like 43 cents an ounce.
Yeah.
Right. So there's the, you know, there is those things, but then there's also that feeling of like, yes, I should. Like, yeah. I'm a great baker. I can make a delicious cake. There's a fantastic bakery at the end of our street. I love the woman who owns it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get that much enjoyment out of it. So I think that when you get stuck in that, I should be, well, it's like, I should be president of the United States, but I don't have any interest in it. And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. I think it was when I realized that I don't even eat that much bread. That I just thought, this is, because they're not small.
No.
You know, no. And it was just constantly there reminding me that I used to make bread.
Well, and also it sort of becomes this like beacon of like it's this beacon of bad feeling, you know, that you're like, oh, I should be. And you're sort of moving it out of the way. And you're like, you know, I see that all the time with juicers. This is another appliance that, you know, yeah. I should be making my own juice. And it's like, do you know how much work that is? You have to go buy all the vegetables, you clean it, you know, sure, but also no.
And from my juicer phase, which I think was before the bread maker phase, well, I did make delicious juices. But you need a ton of fruit and veg to make one glass of juice. That was what I learned. You needed to go to the shop every day and come home with bags and bags of stuff to make one glass. And it was another thing that was a real pain to wash.
Yeah. And so I think that we, with the kitchen appliances and the, especially the unknown kitchen. And also, I think, I wonder if there was a little thing with it being unknown also that you were like a little bit beating yourself up. Like, I should know what this is. I bought this. Like, how do I not know what this is? I'm going to figure it out one day. And you were just like,
yes.
Oh, just, you know, and you said the most important part of the decision-making process, which is, you have a knife.
Yes.
Everything that it did, you do with a knife.
Yeah.
You know?
That's it. And I think there was the what if I need it was there, but it was even bigger than that because I didn't quite know what it was. So I really don't know if I'll need it because I'm not entirely sure what it does and I can't make it work.
Yeah, I have to say the young women who work for me, they're so great where they're like, I'm like, what is this? And they're like on Google and they like figure it out in 5 seconds. And I'm like, oh, I wouldn't even think I'd be racking my brain for, you know, hours. And so I think that trap, that, you know, that grip that like, well, I paid money for it or I should be. There are only so many hours in the day. We can only do so much. And, you know, they're just the things that we can let go of, like that just have a grip on us. And, you know, I think that I see so many people acquiring clutter or clutter building up because of that. Well, I should. And, you know, I mean, this is bougie, but I know how to sew a button on a blouse. I do. I'm a pretty good seamstress. Yeah. I don't have the time. Not really what I want to do. I have a lovely dry cleaner. He does it for a couple bucks. I just now take them. I don't throw the clothes away. I repair them. But I'm like, you know what? There's a business person. It's a little bit of money. I'm in a position where I can do it. And I'm like, let him sew the buttons on my blouses.
And if you found sewing buttons on really relaxing and you really enjoyed it, then do it. But right. If that's not the case, there's no need.
And I'll say this, that's so important what you just said. If you found sewing buttons, if you had truly loved making bread, you would have kept making bread.
Yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah.
So that's why the machine went unused, because it wasn't something that you loved doing. So off it goes. And I'm sure that there is delicious bread that you can get close to you. And you know, and I always think about that. Like, I think a lot about the, it's so funny. The bread thing is such a, it's so, for, you know, for me too. But I was like, here's this business run by these two young people and they're at farmers markets and they love it. It's their passion. And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
You make a delicious baguette and I don't have to.
Yeah, I drink tea multiple times a day. And so keeping my kettle is an obvious, I use it multiple times a day. Of course I keep it. I really like drinking tea. But yes, like you say, if I felt like that about bread from the bread maker, I would still be using it. But, and if I felt like that about slicing carrots.
And most important question, have you missed it? Have you gone to use it?
Not once. Not once.
There we go. There we go.
I cleared the cutlery drawer, was really a mess. And so I took everything out of it. And kind of wiped it down and then put things back in a way that made sense. And I found that I had like multiple potato mashers and I don't particularly even eat mashed potato. And I had, I don't know how many bottle openers. You'd think I had a drinking problem. And so I was able to go, okay, I only need one bottle opener and one masher and maybe two tin openers, but you know, that kind of thing. But it was the bits, like the attachments for the unidentifiable gadget that I just thought, why am I trying to find a place for these? I don't know what they do. I don't know why this is taking up space. I don't know why I've still got it. And yeah, threw it away.
And that underscores why separating the decluttering process from the organizing process is so important. Because if you've been trying to do them at the same time, you would have tried to find a home for that. And do I, you know, and you're like, oh no, let me declutter this. And now I don't have to organize it.
Yeah.
So really separating those two tasks is just makes all the difference in the world.
If you want to help support what I'm doing, please do subscribe to the podcast. Review it, 5 stars would be amazing, and share it with your friends or anyone who might be interested or who might benefit from it. It all really helps. To find out more ways to support the website, the podcast, and my overall dehoarding project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support. The listener voicemail segment has a monthly theme to help you think of something to say. For August, the question for you to answer is, what's tripping you up at the moment? You might be finding it impossible to deal with old photos, or you might have an overriding sense of overwhelm, or you just don't know where to start. This is your opportunity to share your barriers and obstacles with us all. Have your say with your voice. If you want to record a voice message for me to potentially play on a future podcast episode, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave a message. The topic for August is what's tripping you up at the moment. Let us know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail. So my second item that I have already got rid of, I have an ex-girlfriend. We were together for several years and we were both quite crafty and we would make each other little like anniversary cards or little, just nice little cards all the time. And I had quite a selection of these and I was looking through them and I'm on good terms with her now. It was touch and go for a while, but we're all good now. So there's no like, and it was a while ago, so there's no like complicated feelings around them. But also, I felt weird about the idea of getting rid of them, but I also wasn't sure why I was keeping them.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so funny. I had a client once who wanted to make a she had an idea for a product that was two boxes, like memory boxes. And one was called He or She Loves Me and He or She Loves Me Not. And then she said, you put the ended relationships in the not box. And I thought, I think that's for sure clutter block number one, right? My stuff keeps me stuck in the past. Yeah. Am I looking fondly on that relationship? You know, when I'm old and in the rocking chair at the old folks' home, am I going to look back on this and is it going to delight me? You know, I think, and it is, it's a memory and it was a time and a place. And, you know, I feel like that you can, you know, maybe you keep a couple of them, like the very, very special ones, but the sort of ones that were like, you know, Happy Flag Day, or, you know, I'm just made the sort of innocuous ones. Yeah. And you keep a couple. And
that's exactly what I did. Yeah. I kept a couple that just, I just felt more connection to. And I think because they were handmade as well, was more of a, well, I should keep them because she put effort into them.
But I want to stop that for a second, because this is when someone chooses to make crafts, be crafty. You know, I had a client recently where her father died and he made birdhouses. That was his thing. He loved it. There were hundreds in their garage. They were fine. I mean, you know, it wasn't like they were ornate or, you know, they just were like, and she was like, well, but he put so much time into it and I should get, and I said to her, but that's his choice. He chose to spend his time doing that because he enjoyed it. You should not be forced to hang on to something that he did for his enjoyment. And I think that when people give you handmade things, yes, if you love them and you use them or they delight you, you know, a friend of ours drew a pen and ink, like a beautiful picture of us for our wedding. Like it just, makes us so happy. And but just because someone's chosen to, especially if they're prolific in their craft.
Yeah.
That's their choice and they did it for their own reasons and you are not obligated to keep it. And I feel very strongly about that. People are like, but they spent so much time. And I was like, I helped a family not that long ago. The grandmother had been a watercolorist and she was quite talented and was cool. Did it all like in the 60s and 70s, but she was prolific. And no one was going to buy these. There was no commercial value. And I helped the family go through a lot of the paper and photos that were left. And they kind of got to a point where everyone was like, there's so many of them. And, you know, there were four children, adult children, and a bunch of grandchildren. They all went through. And I think they mostly picked maybe two to three. And then they kind of picked ones for the grandkids. And one of the clients, you know, they framed them. And then they were like, the rest go. Like they weren't, some of them weren't very good. It was that realization that she did this activity because she enjoyed it, but it is not your responsibility to bear the burden of that.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. And yet it's hard to absorb that one, isn't it? It's, you feel like there's, I guess, especially if somebody's died, there's something of that person in that item. And yeah, it's, yeah.
And look, keep some of it. Keep a few. Keep the ones you love. You don't have to keep all of it. I mean, I joke, my brother and I joke, our mother is a painter too. And she's very prolific. And we're like, yeah, no, just know that when you go, like, we keep saying to her, give it away now to people who want it and love it so you can see them enjoy it. But otherwise, out it goes.
I think often with those things, there's something in there that speaks to you and you may not know why, or you may know why. It might be they've painted the place you love, or it might just be a feeling you get. And those are the bits to keep. And what's good is generally that what speaks to you probably won't be what speaks to your brother and vice versa. It's something really personal, but it's about picking one or two, isn't it? And then,
yeah. And, you know, I say this all the time. If everything's special, nothing's special. So if you keep every single thing. And it's, you know, become this burden. I mean, I have a client right now who has their parents' paintings, and, you know, he wasn't famous and he's not going to be talented, but just that was that. And they're paying to store them. And it's like, you know, at a certain point, like, no one's going to buy these, and keep the ones that are special to you. And, you know, he's generously, like, everybody on my team, he's given, we all have a painting that we love and we love them as clients, and they're out in the world. But I really think that that is such an important thing for people to realize, that it really, let this hit you, is that you don't have to keep all of it. You don't have to keep all of it, especially in a breakup, in a someone's passed away. Like, if everything is special, then nothing is special.
Yeah, absolutely. So the third thing that I did get rid of, and this it's one that I found really, really hard, and I did manage to get rid of it. But it was a receipt, just a paper receipt. But I looked at the receipt and I could see that the shop I'd bought it in and the date I bought it, it wasn't for anything important. It was, I can't even remember what it was. I remember the significance, which was I'd bought it on the way to visit my dad, and it was the last time I saw my dad before he died.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I just did this with a client. She found the lunch receipt of the last lunch when she took her dad out.
Yeah. And so my initial thought was, well, I'll keep that because that was an important day. And I did keep it. And over time, I realized that not having the receipt wouldn't make any difference to that having been an important day. It wouldn't mean I would forget having gone. It wouldn't mean that it hadn't happened. It would just mean that I didn't have the receipt for the, it was probably a notebook, or, you know, so it was something really unimportant. But not having the receipt didn't take away.
It didn't change, right? You're never going to forget the date. You're never, and, you know, and that's, you know, that's sort of clutter block number one smushed with clutter block number six. It's a little bit trapped with other people's stuff, because you've taken this inanimate object and you've tied it to this great, huge life event. And it's also sort of, you know, keeping you in the past, in the sense of it's a reminder of probably one of the worst days of your life, right? You know, it's not the reminder of, like, the joyful days with your father. It's the, and you're not going to forget that. And you're going to, if you shut your eyes, I did a book event, and this woman was in the audience, and she was talking about, she was very deep in her grief. She lost her mother, and it was very painful for her. And when her mom had died, the next couple of days, she'd swept everything off of her mother's nightstands, and then she'd put them on her dresser. So there were pens, and there was Kleenex, and there was, like, medicine bottles. And she basically made this diorama of a dying person. And it was the first thing she looked at every morning. And, you know, she was like, I just can't. That was the night I lost her, you know, and what I said is, you're not going to forget that. You lived through that. That's a trauma that's in you. You will, unless you get amnesia, there's no way. But what if you removed the memories from the terrible night, and you put your favorite picture of her, or you put, you know, something, so that when you're looking backwards, you're remembering the good things?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because, as you say, like, it was a difficult day. It was not a day I'm going to forget. Like you say, unless I get dementia or lose my memory or something, having a piece of paper from a thing I bought on the way there makes no difference to what it meant, makes no difference to my ability to remember the day. Even because when I first found it and thought, well, I'll keep that, it's a fairly harmless thing to keep. It doesn't really take up space, you know. But even so, I did get to a point where I thought, I don't think this is I don't need this. I don't think this is something I need. And like you say, that's not now that time has passed and I'm more able to remember the good bits. And, you know, certainly for me, I think for a lot of people, initially, I couldn't think of my dad in any way other than with devastation. Whereas now, sometimes it's still devastating, but there's also funny and there's also lovely memories and there's a whole lot of stuff.
I always think about it this way, and I think about this in my own life too, that, you know, if the world exists in a way that they are still present somehow, you know, floating around or in white sheets or whatever they do up there, you know, would they want us to be hanging on to this painful memory?
Yeah.
I have decluttered a lot of people. I have decluttered a lot of people after someone has passed away. No one, I joke, but I'm not joking. No one has gotten haunted. No one has come back from the dead and said, why did you throw that Afghan away? You know, yeah. That I have to imagine that their spirits, in however you define that, their energy, whatever you need, whatever you believe in, they want you to be happy. That's what they want. They don't want to, you know, I'm sure your father, if he had the, wouldn't want you to be reliving that terrible time. He would want you to be reliving the birthday parties that you had and the Christmases and the things where you laughed or the little jokes, you know? And so when people, and I understand we want to keep those talisman that are like a reminder of the fire we walk through, but we don't forget it. We don't, and we don't need the piece of paper to remind us.
Yeah. And even if Dad was up there thinking, you'd better not forget me, I still don't think he'd worry about that receipt in particular. I don't think that would be in his top 1,000 things I mustn't get rid of.
You know, it's interesting. I have a bit of a interest, obsession. I really like to watch shows with mediums.
Oh, yeah, really. Right.
Yeah. And there's this young man, Tyler, the medium, who I just, you know, and they do readings for people all the time, and never once have they channeled someone that's been like, what'd you do with my sports car? You know, did you get rid of my clothes? Like, that's never. So I keep waiting for someone, you know, when they'll recognize things, like they'll say, oh, I see you still wear my watch, or, you know, what about that necklace? Like, there's a few little, but those are sort of, that, but there's, it never comes up. And, you know, there's also a very interesting article, and it's been floating around for a long time, with this woman who was a hospice nurse for 25 years. And she's like, you know, she talks about, I think it's the 5 or 10 things that people say on their deathbed. No one ever talks about their stuff.
No.
So, all right, let's see what you're having trouble with. This is so fun. It's fun for you, but.
I have two of the things. What I will do, I can show you two of the things on the camera, and I will put those photos on Instagram as well of these three things. I don't have photos of the things I've already got rid of, but I will show you. The first thing is this, which is a jewelry set with like handmade glass necklace and earrings. It's very beautiful.
It is very, it's sort of mosaic for the people listening. It's like this very pretty mosaic, and it's earrings that match a pendant, and it's quite pretty. And
it's
very clearly well made. It's a very quality piece. It's not sort of junk from the 99 cent store.
Absolutely. And it is beautiful, but it is not me at all. I don't really wear necklaces anyway. I do wear earrings, but they are just not the kind of earrings I would wear. However, they were a gift. And not only were they a gift, but they were a gift from a family member who is normally, how do I say this, not great at gifts. It's a family member who normally sends me something and I think, why have you Why have you got me that? Obviously, I don't say that to them. And this, even though it's not me, is actually a thoughtful, nice gift, even though it's not quite right. So there's that. And there's also that they got it on holiday. They went to this Italian town that's famed for glass making, and it's glass, made with glass from this. So it just feels quite thoughtful from somebody who's not always thoughtful. And so it feels more meaningful. And so I can't quite get rid of it.
So definitely clutter block number six, trapped with other people's stuff. This is, you didn't go on holiday to that town. You, that wasn't your vacation. And are you, let me just ask you this. Are you not wearing it because you feel like it's too nice, or it's just like not really your style?
It's just not my style. Just not my style. I tend to wear just kind of just silver earrings, just, you know.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's beautiful. I'm the same way. I can appreciate its beauty. I would never in a million years wear it. Yeah. So, all right. So this is the great thing. Letting that thing go will, and it's, this is a little bit tying back to what we talked about, your dad, will not change the generosity and thoughtfulness of the gift.
That's true.
That person who gets it, gets it wrong a lot of the time, got it right once, you'll be like, that one time. And maybe this is going to be a trend moving forward, or you may go back. But, you know, for me, I would, you know, next time you have lunch with a couple friends, say, I'm doing some decluttering. I have this beautiful necklace and these beautiful earrings. I'm never going to wear them. It's not my style. Anyone interested? Because the thing is, it is pretty, and it should be worn. Like, the whole purpose of it is, and you're not, you've said all the things. It's not your style. You don't wear necklaces. But giving it away will not change the spirit in which it was gifted. That's so important. I want everybody out there, giving it away will not change the spirit in which it was gifted.
That's so true.
They still thought of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought of it like that. They did give me a more thoughtful gift, even if it wasn't quite right. And that won't change if it's not sitting next to me.
Nope. And even if you had a moment of like, you know, maybe I'll break it out and just try it. You know, the other thing you could try, like, also just to really cross your T's and dot your I's, like, maybe wear the earrings one day to say, like, maybe I do like them. And then you'll get home. You know, for me, I'll be halfway through the day, I would take them out and be like, no, these aren't, you know, but maybe going out to dinner, let me try it. And then you can, you know, then you can say, I tried it. I did not feel comfortable in them. They weren't great. But this is such a, so important, like giving that thing away. I mean, the way I look at it is something pretty like that deserves to be seen. So right now you're actually kind of doing it a disservice by leaving it in a drawer. So,
And if I, like, I'm thinking through my friends, I can't really see any of them being into it. But if I gave it to a charity shop and somebody wanted a really nice gift for their mum and they couldn't afford most things, but they could get them a handmade glass necklace earring set for £3 from the charity shop, then everybody's winning.
I will say this till I am blue in the face, because I've seen it happen. I can tell you hundreds of stories. When you let go of things, the person who needs it or wants it, it will end up with them. I mean, this is my most famous, you know, I said this story in the book, but it bears repeating here. I had a client whose husband died. He had a lot of weird stuff. He was in the movie business. He had like a helicopter and guns and all this kind of movie making stuff. And he did her a great disservice by refusing to acknowledge how ill he was. So he didn't help her get rid of anything. So she was left with very difficult things that had actual value. And I was like, we had to, like, you know, like, it was a lot. And she was angry because he left a mess. He left a mess, and he could have helped her. He could have said, like, call these six people. They do the same thing I do, you know?
Yeah.
So we got all the way through everything, and we got down to the, And it's just, the whole thing is, we had to laugh, but we were like, in the garage, there was a painting of dogs playing poker. Everybody knows that painting, some version of it. And she was like, I was like, what about this? She was getting ready to move out of state. And she was like, she's like, I hate it. I've always hated it. Not only do I hate the painting, his uncle or somebody painted it, and I hate that human. So every time I look at it, I not only hate the painting, I hate the human who painted it. She said, but it hung in every one of his houses. Like, it was, you know, but she's like, it just fills me with rage. And I was like, well, it's got to go. Because she kept beautiful things, and you know, she had plenty to remember and buy. So we loaded it. It was hard for her. This one was hard. So we loaded it in my station wagon. We drove to the charity shop. And I'm pulling it out of the back of the car, and this like fresh-faced young man, like full of like hope and dreams, came sprinting across the parking lot. And he was like, is that a painting of dogs playing poker? And we were like, yeah. And he's like, oh my gosh, I'm directing my first play. I'm a directing student at the university, and we need that for a set piece because there's a whole joke about it. And he's like, I can't believe my good fortune. And she was just like, here you go. You know, it didn't even make it into the charity shop. It went straight into his car. Yeah. And she had this moment of like, oh, that's where it's supposed to go. And she didn't have to worry, but she didn't have to think about it. So, you know, I have so many of these stories. So when you let go, it will end up with someone who needs it. It just will.
And from times in my life where I could only buy from charity shops, I know how valuable that is. And I have to avoid them now, apart from when I'm donating, because they just trip too many of my switches. I have to buy because it's a bargain. I have to buy because it's recycled. I have to buy because it benefits the charity. I have to buy because it's one of a kind, you know, all of that. And so I just know now, don't go in them. Or if I'm donating, donate and walk out without looking at anything. But, you know, there was a time when that was my only option. And I'm so grateful that they were there, and I'm so grateful that there were people giving their stuff at the time so that I could get it when I needed it.
And there's something very, like, you know, hanging on to stuff that we don't, it just feels very small, right? Yeah. Like, if it's something you don't, there's sort of a graciousness or a benevolence, like, I'm not using this, but someone can. We have a dump, basically, where we take a lot of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's furniture that, like, is in still pretty good condition, but the charity shops won't take it. It's too big. This family who runs it has basically set up a store from all of the stuff that we bring. Yeah. They have, like, a thing. But what they really do with it more than sell it is that when family members or immigrants or people come here, they help set them up in a house.
Yeah.
And I mean, nothing makes us happier. Nothing makes us happier to know that it's not going to go in the landfill and that someone who needs it is going to get it. And so we take a lot of stuff there, you know, because it's going to get used. So, you know, when you think about it that way, that the person will find it and they will use it and they will love it, that's so much better than it being shoved in the back of a drawer.
Really is. It really is. Okay, that's going in the charity shop bag tonight.
Yay!
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune. In a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny, Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People, on Broadway through June 16th only.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, item number two is really random. I will show you here. It is a set of festive coasters made of felt, right?
They've got a bit of a, they're red. They've got a bit of a Christmas theme, right? Yep. You would put them out at the Christmas holidays.
Yeah.
They're cute.
They are cute. I like felt things. I just always have. I'm not sure. Just like felt things. And I probably bought them thinking I could do something crafty with them.
Can I want to point out to the people who are listening, because here's some important notes about them, is that they are commercially made. So yep. They're not handmade.
Nope.
They're commercially made. They still have the ribbon and the tag on them. So they have not been used.
Yeah.
Just want to point that out.
100%. And so I thought I'd use them craftily. but I don't do Christmas decorations. I don't decorate for Christmas. I never have. Not really my thing. I would quite happily skip Christmas altogether if the world allowed me to, but the world doesn't allow you to do that when you live in a Western country. So I go along with it resentfully, but I definitely don't put decorations up. So I don't quite know what I thought I'd do with them. But I clearly didn't do anything with them. And I think it's a kind of what it could have been thing. But yes.
Clutterblock number four, my fantasy stuff for my fantasy life.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so when you say it out loud, and this is a big value to working with a professional organizer if you were struggling with clutter, is that when you start to say these things out loud, you're like, you said the magic words. I don't like Christmas. Like, I just don't like Christmas. So yeah. It's like, well, that's Christmas to me. I mean, they're pretty Christmassy. You know, they're not sort of like silver where you could do like that looks like Christmas.
Yes.
So one of the values of doing this with someone else there is that you say the things out loud and the person says to you, but you don't like Christmas. Oh, right. And yes, crafty. Should you be able to do something? Yeah, you should be breaking bread, but you don't like Christmas. So you're not going to grab when it's time to be crafty, you're not going to gravitate. You know, I work with a lot of people who are crafters, and as you know, crafters out there know, you have a lot of crafting stuff.
Don't we just? Yes.
Yeah. But one of the first like sweeps that we'll do is I'm like, what colors don't you like? Cause there's some people who are just like, I just don't like burnt orange. Like, I don't like orange. And it's like, okay, well, all of this is orange. And it's like, oh yeah, I would never create with that. So let's, you know, and if something came that you need to do, so there are some sweeping things that actually make the decision pretty easy. You don't like Christmas. Great. Off to the chair. Cause you know what? You know what, my friend? There are a lot of people who love Christmas.
That's true.
They love it. And they will be, I'm with you. I'm like Christmas light. I'm like, I like a little bit of it, but you know, and it's for me, it's like Halloween. I don't like Halloween. I don't get it. I'm not going to, you know, I like to see the little kids when they come dressed up. That's cute for about 20 minutes. But you know, this is the biggest thing. You don't like Christmas, and that is Christmas.
Yeah.
You're never going to make anything with it because you're not going to gravitate towards it. And it doesn't make you a bad person or lazy or not thrifty. It's, you know,
I've started applying a rule in the last few years with projects, whether that's repairing something or making a craft project or anything like that, is I have to do it within 2 weeks. I can keep it as long as I do it within 2 weeks. And to the point that I sometimes even put it in my calendar. Like, if you haven't sewn the tear in those jeans by today, they have to go. And it really helps me to see whether what I think I want to do is what I actually want to do. If I think I want to do this project, then I'll do it within 2 weeks. But if 2 weeks passes and I haven't done it, did I really want to do it as much as I thought I did?
I think that's great. I think that's such a great, like, and you know, then that gets into not only do I think I want, like, we do the things we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, we fix the things we want to do and we get caught up in this, well, I should. I was visiting my mother a couple of weeks ago and she handed me my baby book. And I had sort of forgotten about it. And there were three pages that had the pictures and the date of my birth. And then after that, there was nothing. It was just crammed full of stuff she shoved in there.
Yeah.
Like she never put it together. I'm 58 years old. And she was like, I never got it done. And you know what? I didn't care. I was like, oh, I've never seen these pictures. I haven't seen these pictures in so long. I was just so happy to have them that it didn't matter that she didn't make this perfect. And I know my mom, like, she doesn't have any interest in that. Some people love doing that. They love scrapbooking. They're beautiful to get, you know, but if you don't like it, that's okay. She didn't like it. And it didn't lessen the fact that I got these pictures that I hadn't seen in 30 years. Yeah. I was just so happy to have them. So I think that, you know, putting a time limit, if I don't get this done by X, Y, or Z, I'm not going to do it.
I also want to share something. I mentioned this last week on the podcast as well, but it's so good that I'm going to mention it again. There is a woman I interviewed a while ago called Heather, who founded a social enterprise called Cloud's End that works with people who hoard in the Midlands in England. And they do really good work, but they're doing this thing that is just so clever, because I know that a lot of people who hoard, a lot of us have craft stuff in excess. I know that. I managed to give quite a bit to a charity that does like craft sessions for people who are socially isolated and that kind of thing. So that was good. I felt it would be used and appreciated. They got some stuff, all good. But what Cloud's End are doing is they're having a day where they are inviting people to turn up with all of their spare craft stuff. And then they will spend the day together making things.
Oh, I love this.
And then at the end of the day, they just leave with what they've made and nothing else. And it's so clever. And it's not just that it will get things out of the house. It's a community thing. I love
that's
it.
That's the thing that's so fantastic. And that's, you know, and I think, you know, I think that my experience is that people who are wrestling with hoarding disorder, it leads to even more isolation.
Definitely.
You know, that what happens is you're embarrassed about your house, or you're, you know, convinced you're, you know, you're managing your hoard and you're protecting your hoard and you're doing all these things. And look, the science has shown, I mean, we saw what happened to us, the pandemic, we're tribal, you know, we need social interaction. And the less we have, the more, you know, the more you're back on your bullshit, like, and so to have this activity, first of all, it's like, well, you know, you made the craft and you didn't use all this other stuff, so that means off it goes. But then you're with other people and it's that you're connecting and there's a bit of accountability. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that I see in working with hoarders when I do, is that isolation, you know, and I don't know, it's on purpose, not on purpose. It just, you know, the more the isolation, the more extreme it gets.
Yeah.
And just, you know, being able to go out and also be of service and get out of your own way and start to do it. So that's a fantastic,
isn't it?
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's great.
Ticks so many boxes. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My father's form of hoarding is, one thing that he does is he hoards baby strollers, because he, in his mind, is like, oh, well, these homeless people use, unhoused people use these.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he keeps them, but he never lets them go. So, you know, it's this interesting, it was such an interesting cycle to watch, because they never went to anybody, you know, and that by the time he was forced to clean out, they were all ruined. And so just to watch this cycle of, he had created this story, well, I'm doing a good thing. I'm getting all these baby strollers and they're going to go to unhoused people, but they never made it there. And then they got a grip, but he was so entrenched in his story about it that it's just like, well, this is a good thing. This isn't a bad thing. And so I think that I have seen people who are struggling with hoarding disorder, you know, I mean, this is a saying from Alcoholics Anonymous, you're only as sick as your secrets, you know? And so when you shed light and when you speak about it and when you are in community, it's all of a sudden you're like, oh, right, this is what's missing. Or this story that I've told myself when I say it out loud actually sounds, you know, there's the logic, there's some holes in this logic. So I love this fact that she's helping people create something out of it and be in community.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so tricky, isn't it? Because the intention is absolutely kind and generous, but then the disorder bit gets a grip.
Yeah. I think that's such a good way to put it. You know, I think I'm not the only one, but you know, there's sort of a conversation around hoarding about the addiction component to it, right? That, you know, and that, if you've ever been close to someone who's struggling with a drinking problem, you know, they'll do these things where they're like, well, I'm only drinking beer. You know, yes. I've given up whiskey. I'm only drinking beer.
Yeah.
You know, and so they've sort of told themselves this story to make right with the disorder part of it. And that, to me, like my father, like that story, well, I'm buying this to help someone. It's like, great, but you're actually not helping anyone. And you're actually hurting people because you're keeping it away from people who really need it at a reduced price. And so when if you're in therapy and if you're working on hoarding disorder, that's such a great path to go down. And I would think that there would be some alignment with that thinking, like with cognitive behavior therapy, like, okay, I'm buying this to help someone, but am I really helping someone?
Yeah.
Am I letting it go to help?
It also makes me think of when the war in Ukraine first started, people wanted to help. People obviously around the world wanted to help. And certainly within Europe, people started sending truckloads of donations. And within a week or two, people in Ukraine were saying, please stop. Like, we have enough going on without dealing. If you want to help, send money, because then we can use it for what we actually need rather than what you think we need. But also because then we can buy it from Ukrainian businesses, and because then, you know, and then we don't have to have warehouses full of. And again, the intention is great, but
I am so glad you brought this up. So we in the United States, just one of our Hawaiian islands just had a terrible, terrible fire. And it's heartbreaking. My family, my father's born in Hawaii. Like, it's just heartbreaking. Day two, after the fires, they were like, please stop sending stuff.
Yeah.
We live on an island. Here's what we need. We need batteries.
Yeah.
We need feminine hygiene. We need diapers. We don't need your sweater from Abercrombie and Fitch. Like, we don't. I have another very dear girlfriend of mine who worked in disaster relief, like big time. Like, and she was at, went in right after Banda Aceh happened. Am I saying that right? The tsunami.
Yeah.
And she said she has this vision of, like, they were like, the Red Cross plane is coming. The Red Cross plane is coming. And they were like waiting. They're like infant formula. They were ready for all this stuff. And she said the like first pallet came off and it was like literally like just the vision of, she said, like a high heel dropped out of it. And like someone had like donated high heels and wool sweaters. And she was like, no, what? So, you know, in that world of, you know, I'm big on this. Of course, you donate to the charity shop. Of course you do that. But people who go in there are looking for something specific.
Yeah.
When people are in natural disasters, pay attention to what they're asking for. And most of the time it's money, because that's what's going to help.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, an organization here that we work with a lot that I love called Baby to Baby. They chartered a plane and they took diapers, formula, things that parents with young kids need. That made sense.
Yeah.
And by the way, they didn't ask us to donate diapers. They were like, give us money and we will go and buy what people really need. So that doesn't surprise me about the Ukraine, because I'm telling you, day two on Maui, they were like, stop sending stuff. Stop.
Yeah.
I want to take just a little left turn, because this is another thing that I like to point out in terms of what you're donating. Just because someone is in a tough financial position, like, they aren't lucky to get your same t-shirt. I'm sorry. This makes me nuts.
Yes.
Like, well, they're, and I've had clients of mine who are lovely and just say with no irony, well, they're poor, so, you know, they'll take anything. No. Like, if you wouldn't wear it in the sense of like it's stained or it's ripped, not that it's not your style, or you wouldn't put on your kids. No. Where is the dignity? This one makes me nuts.
Yeah. I always say that about, if you've got half a bottle of shampoo, don't donate it. People deserve the dignity of an unopened bottle of shampoo. If they're in a position, whether, you know, they're using a food bank or whether they're in a women's refuge or something, think about the dignity of the person receiving it as much. And, you know, if it's, you could think about like clothes sizes, and, you know, there's all kinds of reasons that somebody might not want your stuff, even if they're in dire need. And it's about giving. And that's where charity shops, just generic charity shops, are great, because they can reach, you know, people in all different sizes and all different, but not the stuff that you.
But also, here's the other thing to think about too, that when people just, I mean, I see so many people use the charity shop as their trash bin. And it's like that's taking valuable resources. Those people that work there have to sort through your garbage. They have to throw it away. Like, you know, yes, donate as much as you can, but be real. I mean, I just met with someone who had like a basement full of like moldy old costumes. And she's like, someone's going to want these. I'm like, you know what? It's going to want these. They're moldy and disgusting.
I did a whole episode about exactly that. Don't just give stuff that doesn't fit for whatever reason. Just don't.
Okay. The red Christmas felt coasters.
I think they can go in the charity shop bag, because just in time for somebody to buy for Christmas.
Oh, someone's got, I can see the person now. She's going to be waiting to wear her Christmas sweater, and she wears a little like jingle bell as a necklace, and she wears antlers during the summer, and she's going to be thrilled to find them.
Because they're cute, you know, they're pretty. I do like them, but as you say, I don't like Christmas, so it doesn't make any sense. That's why I've not used them.
Great.
Okay, final thing, a giant steam cleaner.
For clothes, a steam cleaner for everything. Carpet.
It seems to cover everything. Not that I've ever used it, because like we were talking right at the beginning, actually, I'm not at the cleaning stage yet. Like, it's going to be a while before I can really clean properly, because I'm still very much decluttering. So I feel like I bought it aspirationally. I feel like I'm the kind of person who has a steam cleaner for those stubborn, you know, whatever. But it's big. It's taking up a lot of space. I don't know when I'm going to be at that stage. This whole thing is slow. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you some questions about it.
Do.
In the price, did you buy it?
I did.
And what, can roughly price point?
It was, I can't remember how much, but I remember that it was reduced enough for me to think, I've got to get this now because it's cheaper than it would be, but it was not cheap at the same time.
Right. So, you know, that's something to take into consideration. Let's look forward to aspirational, you know, future you, right? We've gotten through the decluttering stage, you're in the organizing, you got through the organ, you're in the cleaning stage. Historically, have you sort of, are you a good deep cleaner? Is that a task that you enjoy? Would you feel like putting rubber gloves on and feeling super satisfied cleaning your couch?
No, but I feel like I should be.
Right. But let's just go.
Yeah, but no, I'm absolutely not. No.
And I feel like I should be. I will say this. I don't like gardening. I love having a garden. I love having pretty plants to look at. I love it. I don't enjoy. Should I be able to? Am I actually able to? I am. I don't enjoy it. I don't do it. I have a lovely man who comes every 2 weeks. He loves it. He's so good at it. I am in a position where I can pay him to do it. And I have a garden that I like, and that, you know, there's that. So I would say, if historically, you know, get a thrill or any enjoyment out of deep cleaning, which is a lot of work, you know, after, I would think that after this big process of decluttering and organizing it into the cleaning, like, it might feel nice to hire a company. Like, you know, we have a place here called Stanley Steamer, and they bring a truck and they can do everything and they're professionals. And then you're like, I did it, you know? Yeah. And so I would venture to guess that even when you get to that point, you're probably not going to do it. And that's okay. You know, and maybe this is something that you do put on OfferUp or whatever your version, you know, maybe see if you can get a little bit of money for it, or put it on the Buy Nothing group. Like, maybe someone will buy it for $50 and you can recoup a little bit. But I'm going to venture to guess that when you get there, that's not a task you're going to relish. And then you're going to feel worse because you're like, well, I'm at the place now and now I'm not even doing it. And then I bought this thing and now I'm totally clutter block number 7, the stuff I keep paying for, and my fantasy stuff for my fantasy life, because I should be this person. And it's like, I don't like to garden. I don't enjoy it. You know, I should, I guess, or I could, I'm capable, but it's not where I find my enjoyment. And I think that there's something about when you get to that point in your journey, there might be something celebratory about, I'm hiring a company and they're going to come in here and they're going to clean this place. And I'm going to go to the cafe at the corner and I'm going to have a latte and I'm going to come back and it's going to be done.
And I think there's an element of, you know, the sunk cost fallacy.
Yes.
Like, and not just that I paid money for it, but also it's taken up space for so long. And I think there's an element of sunk cost fallacy in there. Like, I've got to make it worth, like, if I keep it and use it, that will justify the space it's taken up over the years.
Exactly. And, but where's the sort of the flip side to that? Like, and I just was talking about this the other day. I know, I'm just doing a little YouTube episode on it, but you know that, guess what? We make mistakes. We buy things that we don't end up using. We make mistakes. And you know why? Because we're human and we make a mistake. And so holding on to the thing to remind you that you made a mistake and make you feel bad about yourself and that you're going to sort of try and resurrect it. And like, you know, instead of, to me, it's like, it probably wasn't my best purchase. I'm probably not ever going to, in fact, I know I'm not going to use it. I mean, the idea to me of steam cleaning my couch makes me want to like lay on the floor. It sounds awful, you know, and I do this for a living. Like,
yeah.
But I'd be like, oh no, we're calling the company head. So I think that's exactly that sunk cost fallacy where you're like, well, this will justify the money that I spent. Or you just have a, you know, a moment with yourself and you're like, yeah, you made a mistake. All right, let's not do that again. Let's learn from that. Let's let it go and let's move on. It's just, it's this idea that with that feeling of like, well, if I justify it, I didn't make the mistake.
Yeah. Well, it's 100% that. And something I say a lot is when I or somebody else thinks, oh, well, if I get rid of it, that will be a waste of money. The point I always make, whether on the podcast or just in my own head, is the money was wasted when I bought it. What I do with it now makes no difference.
Well, I can't. That is like, that's the thing that we should have printed on the plates, you know, or on a t-shirt. The money, you're not getting, the money was already wasted.
Yeah.
The money was already wasted. You know, so it's not the behavior down the future isn't, and hanging on to it isn't going to, you know, I mean, it's such an old, you know, two rights don't make two wrongs don't make a right. Like, you spent the money already. And I always tell people too, like, take that moment, take that feeling when you're on the verge of another one of those purchases, right? Yeah. Like, historically, I have bought these small appliances and I have not used them. And they feel like, maybe this time, like, is there a way that I can do this same task either without the small appliance or hire someone at a reasonable cost? Like, is there a way to do that? And so you can learn from it instead of beating yourself up. But I think that's so the money was already wasted.
It's so interesting. I did an episode recently with regular guest Dr. Jan Eppingstall, who is a therapist, and she found some research that showed that people who hoard have a particularly strong anticipation of regret, and that can be why we buy things. We think, I'm going to regret this if I don't buy it. And we anticipate how regretful we'll be. So we buy the thing. But what I was saying to her was that I think I do get that, but I've started to turn it around. And if I'm thinking about buying something, I quite often anticipate the regret I'll feel if I do buy it. Mm-hmm. And I'm there in the shop thinking, if you get to the car with this, or if you get home with this, you will think, oh, why did you do this?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I wonder if there's some unwinding of, like, you know, again, I'm not a therapist and this may be a question for her, but is it tied to some deeper, bigger regret? Like,
yeah.
You know, did I not make a life choice that I regret?
Yeah.
And that, so this feeling like, if I don't buy this.
And so you overcompensate for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I did an interesting thing yesterday. We were in our hurricane yesterday. So we were just stayed up in bed all day and watched movies. And I finished a book and it was just heaven, 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 heaven. But I was like scrolling through Instagram, and as you do when you're bored, things were popping up that I should buy and I should buy and I should buy. So I just emailed myself the link to buy it. So it was out of my head. And then this morning when I'd had a cup of coffee and a clear head, and I went back and I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, then I got through the impulse and I woke up and I was like, these apple cider vinegar gummies are not going to fix your life.
I have a friend with a new baby, and she says the worst every day things are arriving from Amazon, because at 3 a.m. when the baby's crying, she spots something that somebody says helps calm a baby down and hits buy on her phone while the baby's screaming in her ear. And it's that weak moment, isn't it? And
yeah,
if you can
weak
put
moment.
Something between, like you say, emailing it to yourself or adding it to your wish list instead of your basket.
But here, I'm going to just say this though about the wish list or putting in your basket. The only thing I don't like about that is it makes you revisit the shopping site.
True.
That's why I don't do it for me. For me, I email it to myself, so I put another layer that I have to go through, that I don't go straight to the thing. And you know what? Here's the thing. The baby's always going to cry. Like, you know, sure, there may be something out there that will help, but also babies cry.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the feeling. That's totally the feeling. But I think that's so interesting about regret. Like, I'm going to regret not buying this. But then when you think about, when you sort of step back and think about that logically, there are hundreds of thousands of things that you've never bought that you never think about again.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, you, I'm sure in the moment you were, I was at a very fancy department store with a friend of mine and her daughter's friend. They were 13 at the time. And there was this purse and it was on sale, and it was even on sale. It was not cheap. It was $400 and something. And it was, and I was like, oh, but it's marked down. And it's, you know, it's sort of going through all this stuff. And I was like, ah, you know, the last thing I need is another purse. I had plenty of purses. But I kept, oh, it's said, you know, they don't mark this designer down very often. And this young woman took the purse from me and she stood in front of me and she said, okay, I have the purse in one hand, or I have the $425 in cash in the other hand. What are you going to grab? Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm going to grab that $425. And she's like, put the purse back.
Yeah.
And I was like, right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Like when you look at it that way. And I think the trick in those moments, and especially people who acquire a lot, is stop.
Yeah.
Just take a breath. You know, notice your feet on the ground, feel your breath, do a couple rounds of box breath, you know, like just stop, because the dopamine will take over, right? Yeah. You'll get like a little frenzy, or you get and just stop and walk around the store. I mean, they say, I forget what the percentage is, but there's some, if you touch something, you're something like 60% more likely to buy it, or some number, like put it down, walk away. And this thing, I've noticed this, they do this with airline. I've been buying some airline tickets and they're like in bright red. It's like one seat left, and in tiny letters. It says, you know, at this price, or, you know, when you're like, I have to buy it now. And you're like, I don't even know if I want, you know, that there's, at the level that we're being marketed to, and the level that we're being sold to, and the idea that you'll never find this again. And maybe you won't, but that's not going to be the end of your life.
That's it. The episode that where we talked about the anticipation of regret was about scarcity, and more importantly, the fear of, or perception of scarcity. And we talked a lot about those marketing strategies, because they get you, they get everybody, but especially if you're already susceptible, whether that's just because you're tired, or whether it's because you hoard, or your baby's crying, or whatever it is, it's so hard to stay rational when everything is screaming at you, there's one left, or there's, you know, it won't be, it's only discounted this week, or whatever the sell is.
And then when you compound on top of that, you know, for me, you know, my life was very informed with having grandparents who lived through the Depression. That was very, very, very informed. I mean, I know for so many people in the UK, it was formed by your parents or grandparents having lived through World War II, you know, that the scarcity was real. So you sort of have that. And you know, I mean, I heard somebody saying on the news yesterday, as this hurricane was coming towards us, like, you know, well, California, the road shuts down, you know, we only have 2 weeks worth of food. And I thought to myself, I have a month's worth of food in my pantry. Like this sort of idea, I mean, that
even just the beginning of COVID, when you couldn't buy toilet paper, you couldn't buy vegetables, you couldn't buy tinned food, you couldn't buy bread, you couldn't buy soap. And as soon as we had it, also we had some petrol shortages, not COVID related, Brexit related, the gift that keeps on giving. but basically what happened was somebody somewhere said, oh, we might run out of petrol. And then the newspaper said, we might run out of petrol. So everybody filled their car up with petrol. And so we ran out of petrol. And so the paper said, we've run out, you know, and it, even when there's no, so sometimes it feels very manufactured, and there isn't, or there wouldn't be a shortage if everybody calmed down.
Well, and I think that that's, you know, that that's so important. And I think that idea of regret, But, you know, I talk about this a lot in the second book, Make Space for Happiness. Like, we're being marketed to, you know, this is very manufactured. This is very, you know, in the olden days, you know, when I was a kid, we had three TV channels. You knew when the commercials were at, you know, 12 after and 22 after, and you went to the bathroom. And now it's a 24-hour commercial. And so we've lost our media literacy. We've lost our critical thinking. And if you are inclined anyway to lean into that, like if that's going to push all your buttons, it's going to push all your buttons. Like, you know, the sale, I mean, you know, we joke around this house in the same way that if everything's special, nothing's special. We go to the grocery store and my husband is always, well, if everything's on sale, nothing's on sale. It's like, if you're marking down all these discounts, you know, and we know the tactics. We know that stores mark things up so they, you know, that the department stores, they mark them up so that they can mark them down. But that's really the, you know, so it's getting back. And if you struggle with this, you know, just taking a breath, doing your research, doing your due diligence, you know, all of those things are super important. Super, super, super important.
So I think in terms of the steam cleaner, that is essentially a shelf at the moment. It's where the laundry goes. I think I need to look into, I think you're right that even when I get to a stage where it would be used, I'm not going to relish the prospect of doing it. And so I definitely need to get rid of it. It's the how that I need to work out. But I think you're right. I'm not going to look to make money on it. But if I can sell it for something, that would be ideal. And then if I can't, just see if someone will take it. Someone wants it for free because it's more important that it goes. Plus, it's a long time since I bought it. So it's not like I need to make up that money now because I bought it last month.
Right. And I think, you know, this is a good thing where that sort of time limit, like, let me list it for, you know, I don't know, for us, we have a group called OfferUp. So it's an app and there's something. It's like, okay, let me put it on offer. Let me pick a number that I feel comfortable with, $50, whatever. And let me put it on for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. If nobody buys it by then, no one's going to buy it. Yeah. And then you go to the next thing. And I think that's the sort of thing that you need to look at is that, you know, when you get to the point that you could use this machine, would you? Sounds like you're not going to, and guess what? Doesn't matter. You know, you're not going to get to the pearly gates and, you know.
My one regret.
And they're going to say, well, you never used that. You never used that steam cleaner. You're going down.
My one regret is that I never steam cleaned anything. So, Tracy, if people want to find you online, I would strongly recommend Tracy's Instagram. Or if they want to read your books, where can they find you?
Absolutely. So I'm at Tracy_McCubbin on Instagram. It's really a fantastic place. You know, we have a great time. It's very supportive. I do these fun little challenges. I also have a YouTube channel. This is just Tracy McCubbin. So if you want to do a bit of a deeper dive, definitely. And both of my books are available, you know, in all the, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop. And also, I have to do a little research if they're available. I think they are in libraries in the UK. They're definitely available in most libraries in the United States, which is great.
I will check my local library and I'll let you know.
Excellent. And also, if you have an Audible account, it's free, right? You know, the books are free with an Audible account. So TracyMcCubbin.com is where to find me. And I, you know, please reach out. I love connecting with people. I always love chatting with you. Always, always, always. And I'm just cheering you on.
This has been amazing, Tracy. So it's really good to hear you apply the theories that I've read your books. We've talked about them before. But yeah, it's really interesting to hear you apply that framework to real life examples, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And it works. It works. And it's a way, you know, for people who are struggling and people who are listening, it's a very kind of logical, like, it's just, I take this from experience and hearing other people. And you know, it's not judgy, and it's not, you know, it's just inviting you to look at your stuff in another way. And all of a sudden you start to see the stories that you tell, and it's going to, it's almost like when people see it spelled out on a page or hear it, they're like, oh, I'm not the only one that thinks that. Oh, that's a little thing I made up. So, you know, if you're struggling, I invite you. It's really, and both, like, I do a very deep dive on the clutter box. There's two posts on my Instagram that you, I think they're pinned, where I do a really deep dive. And I think, you know, it works. It works.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So my top tip is from a podcast called The Chase Jarvis Live Show. And on this episode, James Clear, he of Exceptional Advice on Habits, is a guest. And have a listen to him talking about taking action.
So the most important thing is to get started. It's interesting. A lot of the time we feel like we need to learn more before we can take action. But almost always the best way to learn is by taking action. So you actually probably need to research less and take action more. This is something that I refer to in the book as the difference between motion and action. A lot of the time we're in motion, we're doing things that feel like we're moving, but we're not actually doing things that could deliver a result. So talking to a personal trainer is motion. It doesn't matter how many times you talk to a personal trainer, you're never going to get in shape. But getting under the bar and doing 5 squats, that's action, because that could actually get the result that you want. And so at some point you need to do the thing that can get you a result. And I think the earlier you can do that, the better, because then you can start learning.
And we know he's right, don't we? We all listen to that and know he's right. And so I'm certainly going to try harder to implement that. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with purchase.